I would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet today, the Arakwell people of the Bundjalung Nation, and pay my respects to the elders past, present, and emerging. Are you ready to win at the game of life? Well, throw out that rule book and get down to the business of being the best and most authentic version of you. Welcome to the Human Design Podcast. We're changing the rules around success, abundance, purpose, love, and life, where we're creating a planet where everyone can thrive in a world that loves and supports each other. I'm your host, Emma Dunwoody, a qualified master coach, human design expert, podcaster, and entrepreneur that is living the life of my dreams, breaking all the rules while doing it, making a huge impact, and living my design and manifesting miracles on the daily. Join me as I break down and simplify everything you need to live in alignment with your human design, teach you how to recondition your unconscious mind for greatness, and to take back your power so you can manifest your heaven on earth and serve the rest of the planet at the same time. It's time to give up the fear and step into your highest potential, to reach for the stars, to know and live your greatness. It's what you deserve, and it's what the planet really needs from you. So buckle up and enjoy the ride. Hey, hey, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. Well, I just have to take a beat myself because this human is one of my all-time favorites. In fact, for all of you that do know my story and that my catalytic moment was a diagnosis of depression and panic disorder, the book, The Biology of Belief, was something that absolutely transformed my life. And I think that was the moment that I became a fangirl of the incredible Bruce Lipton. So Bruce, welcome to the podcast.
I am honored to be here with you because you are what we would call the poster child for biology of belief.
Well, thank you. I do feel like I am the poster child. I have fallen down and got back up that many times. And because of that, I'm in a place now that I can say with all certainty that I will never go and do depression again. I will never do panic disorder again because I understand how my brain works and that I have sovereignty over that. So, oh my goodness, I have so much to ask you. Human design, I know we quickly, very briefly spoke before I hit record, is something new to you. And I'm excited to talk to you about it and introduce you to it because it is something that directly correlates to our energetic blueprint. And I'm going to talk a bit about the gene keys. I don't know if you've ever heard of the gene keys either.
The gene key.
Nope. Great. I can, again, tell by the look on your face. No, this is really cool. And I think you're going to be pretty, I would say you'll be curious about the guy who created the gene keys, Richard Rudd, because it's something that maps back to our genetic codon, to how we specifically turn on and turn off parts of our genes. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But first and foremost, Bruce, I think the thing that really transformed my life was this understanding around beliefs. And I feel like beliefs has been such a huge part of your story and how we all came to know you. So let's kick off and just, can you tell us a little bit about the story of Bruce? You know, like, why are you sitting here right here today? Why am I so inspired by this incredible man and the work that you've done? Sure. Tell us a bit about your journey, because I think it's really important for people to understand that people don't just pop out great. They have to become great. So tell us a little bit about that journey, please.
Well, my journey started off as in second grade in school. I looked in the microscope and I saw living things like amoebas and things called paramecia. And I looked at these little things and I thought, oh my God, there's a world down below there that you can't see. And they're, you know, you can see them moving around and they're, it's not by like a pinball bouncing. They were looking here. They were, and for my second grade mind was, oh my God, these are little people.
I love that.
And that was my introduction to cells. And then I ended up in graduate school working in cell biology, and my emphasis was on the electron microscope studies of cells. And you go, well, what's that? And I go, well, most of us have used a microscope, and you can see certain things, but if you try and blow it up anymore, it just gets blurry and you can't see anything. An electron microscope, I actually look inside the cell and see the pieces inside, and it's like, every day when I would go to work, this was always the greatest part of my job as a researcher. I would go to work and I would look at things in the microscope that no human had ever seen before. Every day I'd go in and go, oh my God, nobody's ever seen this before. So it was like exploring another universe. I started to work with these cells and I started cloning them. I want to emphasize what it means because people say cloning and I go, yeah. Cloning means I only put one cell in a petri dish. And when it divides every 10 or 12 hours, then the cell population doubles. So first is 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, blah, blah, blah. After a week, I have 30,000 cells in the petri dish. But the big important point about this is that all the cells are genetically identical because they came from the same parent. So I have 30,000 genetically identical cells. And this is in my research lab. What was I doing career-wise? I was a professor in a medical school. And I was teaching people the conventional belief that genes control the character and behavior of our lives. And let's just look back on that for a second and say, what was I teaching? And the answer was I was teaching victimization. I said, what do you mean? Well, I'm trying to tell people that genes control their characters and their traits. As far as they know, they didn't pick the genes. If they don't like the characters and traits, they can't change the genes. And then add on top that we tell people genes turn on and off by themselves. I said, what are we programming? We were programming that people are victims of their heredity, meaning their genes controlling their life and the genes control themselves and you don't. And therefore, whatever they do is the character of your life. So we were teaching people they were powerless in controlling their life. Because the genes, well, who's going to control the genes? The scientists are going to control the genes.
Yeah.
So that's where I was in my teaching moment, in my laboratory moment. I was just cloning these cells. So now I have a dish with 30,000 genetically identical cells. And my research experiment is I divided the cells into three different petri dishes. So there's 10,000 cells in each dish, but all the dishes have genetically identical cells in them. We grow cells, and this is going to come back in a second because then it becomes really profound.
I love it.
We grow cells in a fluid environment called culture media. And that's what we synthesize in the lab. And okay, so here's what it is, and it's going to come back. Culture media is the laboratory version of blood. I go, why? Because cells in your body live in the environment of the blood. So if I'm going to grow them in a petri dish, I want the same environment. So I say, what is human blood made out of? And then in the lab, I make a recipe, just like a cooking recipe. I make culture medium. But I can change some of the constituents. So I made three slightly different versions of culture medium. And I go, it's just slightly chemically different. I go, and the environment that the cells live in is the culture medium. So I'm changing the environment. Three dishes, genetically identical cells, but I put into each dish a different environment. So A, B, C environments. So in dish one, environment A, in 3 days, the cells form muscle. In dish two, with environment B, in 3 or so days, they form bone. And in dish three, with environment C, the cells form fat cells. Well, wait a minute. What controls the fate of these cells? Muscle, bone, fat. I go, well, they all were genetically the same. So the only thing that was different was the environment. I said, oh, my goodness, the chemistry of the environment is controlling the genetics. Change the chemistry, change the genetics. I go, wow, yeah. Well, this is not what I'm teaching. We're teaching because why? Now it's not genes controlling themselves. It's environment controlling genes.
Yeah.
I go, well, what's the difference? I said, well, we're the ones that control the environment. So if I control the environment, then by definition, I control my genes. Oh, I am the master of my genes. I'm not the victim. So how does this relate to us as human beings? And the answer is simply this. We are skin-covered petri dishes.
I love it.
Underneath your skin, you have 50 trillion cells. And they are in the original culture medium, blood. I go, so wait a minute. Does it make a difference if the cell's in the plastic dish or the skin-covered dish? I go, no. I say, in both situations, they're controlled by the environment, the culture medium, the blood. So I say, wait, So the cells in my body, their genetics are controlled by the chemistry of the blood. And I go, yeah. And I go, well, wait a minute. Who controls the chemistry? So I go, well, the brain is the chemist. It puts the different chemicals into the blood. But then came the biggest question of all, with the most profound, important answer. And I said, well, yeah, but what chemistry should the brain be putting into the blood? And the answer is, whatever picture you hold in your mind, the brain translates that picture into complementary chemistry and then releases that chemistry in the body. So guess what? Your biology matches the picture in your mind. Change the picture in your mind, you change the chemistry and the genetic activity of your body. Example, if you have a picture of love, the brain releases wonderful love chemistry, dopamine, pleasure, oxytocin, bond with your lover, growth hormone, which does exactly what it says. You enhance your growth and your vitality when you're in love. I go, that's not a coincidence. That's a reality. When people are in love, they glow. I go, well, that's the chemistry. But I said, wait, what if I have a picture of fear? I go, oh, well, we don't release love chemistry. We release stress chemistry. Cortisol, things that affect the adjustment of the body to get ready for fight or flight. We release chemistry that controls your immune system. Different chemistry. So when you change your thought, you change your chemistry. When your chemistry changes, the behavior and the genetics of your cells change. And all of a sudden, so, well, yeah, then if I change my belief at a moment, then I'm changing my chemistry and I'm changing my fate of my cells. Yes, so all of a sudden it says, after teaching medical students all the years that people are victims, it turns out, oh my God, no, people are masters. They just didn't know it. And that we are creating the character of our lives with the chemistry that comes from the brain, which is connected to the picture in our mind. Now, that sounds like a little New Agey kind of stuff, but here, let me just add this.
Listeners. They're all over it. In fact, I've been banging on about it from my depression diagnosis for 20 years now, Bruce.
Well, that's why I'm glad that you're here, because now I'm talking to the audience that you can back it up by saying, yeah, I was there.
Yeah.
Which is, that's a different thing than me saying, that's how it works. You say, I know how it works. I was there. So that's why your words to me are so profoundly important in the conversation.
Yeah.
Because you didn't know what I'm talking about. You've experienced it.
Yeah. For me, it was that in that moment, I'm sitting in front of the expert and he's telling me that I'm going to live this way for the rest of my life, that I'm going to learn to manage it. And I just knew, and I said to him, if you can tell me how I got here, then I'm pretty confident I can work out how do I get out of here. And he was like, no, that's not the way it works. It's genetic, it's hereditary.
That's what I taught him.
Yeah, exactly, right?
How to think that way. Well, that's wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I've got something for you. Someone told me the other day, or I heard on a podcast, because they talk about with depression, it's a chemical imbalance. And when I started researching all about this chemical imbalance, I couldn't actually find anything about this chemical imbalance. And as far as I could tell, the chemical imbalance came after the thought. So if you were having lots of what I would call unresourceful thoughts, negative thoughts, thoughts that are like, I am depressed, then, you know, the chemical imbalance would look like it would come afterwards. And then recently I heard, and I can't remember where it was, so I can't reference the person, that actually chemical imbalance isn't even a thing. It's just something that someone talked about and then it was sort of grabbed onto by the, you know, mental health industry, if you like, and it's not even a thing. What is chemical imbalance even a thing?
No, people have to understand this. The chemistry of the blood changes the genetics and the behavior, okay? Now, you might say, oh, in depressed state, I have an imbalance. I say, no, that's a perfect balance for manifesting the depressed state.
Yeah.
It's not an imbalance. If that's what you want to make, then that's the chemistry that makes what you want to make.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, then I can't call it an imbalance. I say it's the correct adjustment to the picture. Now, the idea is what if you change the picture? I go, oh, well, then you change the chemistry. Is it an imbalance? I say, no, it's a dynamic chemistry matching consciousness. Change consciousness, the chemistry changes, and the body changes right along with it.
Yeah.
Okay. So the issue is, had nothing to do with genes. Let me just give a fact of science to the audience here for a second.
Please.
And that is this, yes, the globe is facing a health crisis all over the planet. And the more money we put into it, the less effective it's working, actually. And I go, well, where's the issue coming from? And here's the point. What is the cause of illness? You ready for this one? Less than 1% of illness is even connected to genes. In other words, hardly any illness in the health crisis is genetic. 90% or more of illness is stress. And I go, well, wait a minute, you know, it's like, how's that working? And as we just talked about, if you have stress, and now let me give a definition of stress, because it's like, there's all levels of stress. I mean, a person who is in war has a hell of a lot of different stress than a person at home taking care of their pet, but they both can produce stress. So let me give the definition of stress, because it's wide ranging. The definition of stress, in my opinion, is you have a destination you want to go. This is what you want. If anything gets in the way of allowing you to get there, the thing that gets in the way causes stress. So it could be anything. I go, yeah, but I say, so, but the net result is the same. I go, what is it? And people, you have to understand this very important point. The body has two fundamental states, A, B. It can be A or it can be in B, but it can't be in both at the same time. I go, so what are those? Growth, where the body is taking care of itself, maintaining it, repairing itself, you know, cleaning, filtering, you know, taking care of the machine. Growth. Adding energy and doing all that. Great, great growth. The other state is protection. I say, what's protection? That walls me off from the threat. So I said, wait a minute. So let me explain why they can't be the same. Growth, there's a stimulus out here. If it's a stimulus that offers you growth, whether it's love or food or whatever it is, you want to go to that stimulus. And you want to be open to take it in. So growth, go to the stimulus, be open. But if that stimulus is threatening, you don't want to go to it. You want to go away from it. Do you want to be open? I say, no, I want to be closed. I want to protect myself. So I say, what's the difference? Growth, go to the stimulus, be open. Protection, go away from the stimulus, be closed. I go, what's the point? You can't go to the stimulus and away from it at the same time. You can't be open and closed at the same time. So you're either in growth or you're in protection.
Yeah.
And then I go, well, what's protection? A threat. I say, what's a threat? Anything that interferes with your life. And all of a sudden, you start to realize why today's world, so many people are threatened by what? Do I have enough money? Can I pay the rent? Can I afford the food? The food prices? Oh, can I afford health? Can I do, you know, my life is now dependent on this world economy. I have no control over it, and it threatens my existence.
Yeah.
And I go, and this is why 90% of illness on the planet is due to stress, because we are living out of harmony and balance with nature. And that automatically is, if you're living in harmony with nature, then you're in harmony. But if you're not in harmony, that's the stress.
Yeah.
And stress is the cause of illness. Is it a chemical imbalance? No, it's a chemical alteration. Is it imbalance? Imbalance means something just went off and went out of alignment. I go, this is not out of alignment. It's directly applied.
Yeah, it's exactly what you're telling it to do.
Yeah. So basically it says, where's our health problem? I go, it's our belief system.
Yeah.
But do I need to tell that to you? No, you can tell the audience.
Yeah. Yeah, I tell you, it's one of the things I've spent most of these years on is my beliefs. And I love what you just said about, you know, stress and growth. Because I think in this, I know for me, one of the things that I've learned is actually to, you know, go towards the stimulus, to go towards the thing that is scary instead of protecting myself from it. And because I work in a sort of category that crosses over the spiritual world, you know, there's a lot of people who talk about protecting their energy. And I'm like, I don't think protecting your energy is a great thing, because it presupposes that, you know, there's something to be afraid of, or there's something you don't have any sovereignty over. And I often think it's like, it's not about that. It's about having the ability, like, to say, well, that's just not mine. And letting something go is very different to protecting yourself from something. So I thought that was really, like, that's really profound in this day and age, because especially where we're sitting in the world where, and I want to come back to the Great Convergence, because I watched it a couple of years ago and I was like sitting there every few minutes. I'm like, what? That's brilliant. You know, like, it just kept blowing my mind. But I think we're in this time where we have to stop running away. We have to stop turning our back on the scary things. Because that was for me, for my diagnosis, when I, you know, first discovered that there was this thing, depression, and I was doing it, that I had to stop running away from it. You know, I had to actually lean into it and get to know it and understand it. And I think that that's a lot of where we're at in the world right now. We have to stop running away from the things that either we think we have no control over, because in many cases we have a lot more control over things than we think we do. And, you know, leaning into it and leaning into that growth mentality.
Yeah, well, the basic thing is this. Are you controlling your life, or is your life being controlled? Those are two different things. If I'm controlling my life, then I'm going to manifest wishes and desires and all those things. If somebody else is controlling me, they want me to conform to whatever their story is. And the question is, are you running your life with your creative consciousness, or are you responding to your life with your programs of fear and doubt and all those things that are instilled in us? And the answer is, only 5% of the day does the average person actually move in a direction to enhance their life and vitality. 95% of the day, the average person is responding to beliefs and programs that disempower them. And the difference, and this is why it's critical, is the creative part is, we say the mind. The mind controls. So that's a fact. But what people don't recognize, we have two minds, and they're different functions, but they integrate and work together. I say, so wait a minute. So when I say the mind, well, that's wrong, the two minds. And then I say, but which mind are you operating from? The latest evolution of the brain is right behind your forehead. That's the seat of what we call the conscious mind. The conscious mind is creative. That's what makes humans different than animals. We can have an imagination. Well, if you have an imagination, then you can do a manifestation. Yeah. Wouldn't it be great to go to the moon? Yeah. And guess what? We manifested the rockets and we go to the moon. It was first imagination. Okay. So the conscious mind is creative with wishes and desires. The other mind is not creative. The other mind is 100% program. It's called subconscious mind. Subconscious minds are programs. And we've been programmed. Oh, that's evil, the subconscious mind. I go, no, it's not. It's a hard drive. He goes, your hard drive and your computer evil. I go, well, if you program something that has a virus in it, yeah, it's going to sure as hell screw it up. Is it the hard drive's problem? I go, no, it's the program you put in. So I go, okay, so the hard drive is subconscious. It has no creativity to it, really. It is programmed. And I go, why? Well, a very simple reason. Let's just cut right to it. And the answer is this. The brain is a computer. It's not like a computer. It is a computer. Yep. The most fabulous computer humans have ever encountered. We can't duplicate it in any sense. I go, so what? I said, well, the interesting part, as a computer, it functions exactly the same as the computer on your desktop. Why? It's a computer. I go, so what's the point? Story. In the old days, go out and buy a brand new computer, come home, plug it in, push start. The screen lights up. It's booted up. I say, oh, right, the computer's ready. I say, now let's do something. And you go, well, I can't do anything. I say, you got a brand new computer. And they say, first, I have to put programs in the computer. Otherwise, I can't access the computer. I go, oh, well, how do you get the programs? We downloaded them. surf the web, drawing spreadsheets, writing programs. We download the program. And once the program is downloaded, then you can type on the keys and put your information in. So now let me make this work with the human brain. The subconscious is the hard drive. The conscious is the creative keyboard. I go, what's the point? When the brain is going to develop, the first thing you have to do is, well, it boots up. I say, when? 3 months before you're born, the brain is lit up. But it, can you do anything? I say, no. I say, why not? Now I got to put programs in. I go, oh, for 7 years, your brain is not operating at the level of conscious creativity. It's operating at the level of what is called theta. Theta is hypnosis. Hypnosis for 7 years? I go, yeah, why? I say, how many rules do you have to learn to be a functional member of a family? How many rules do you have to learn to be a functional member of a community? Thousands of rules. I go, wow, how is a child going to learn thousands of rules? And I go, an infant can't read a book. An infant can't go to a school, but they need to download the program. I say, how? Theta is hypnosis. All the child has to do is watch. Yeah. And watches the parents. And watches by gender as well. If I am a boy, generally I watch my father's behavior because that represents what I'm going to be. And I watch my mother's because that's a future partner type of person that I want. And I download each of their behaviors. I download the behavior of my siblings. Why? They've been in the family longer. So I watch their behavior, see how they're doing. If my brother says something, gets hit, I'm going to learn not to say that. You know? And then, more importantly, I watch the community to see what are the standards of behavior, all in a state of hypnosis 7 years. Mm-hmm. After age seven, then the conscious brain has allowed now to type on the computer and put in your wishes and desires because conscious is creative. And I go, great, story makes sense 100%, but now I got a problem. I go, what is it? The conscious brain can do two things that are different. And I go, what is it? Well, one, imagine your body is a vehicle and your eyes are the windshield and the conscious is driving you to where? Wishes and desires, creativity. What do you want? Creative. Okay. But the conscious mind can think. I listen, so? But thinking is not looking out. Thinking is looking in. A thought is inside. It's not out here. It's not written anywhere. You know, Emma, today's Tuesday, we're making a recording. Tell me what you're doing on Thursday. And it's not written in front of you right now, but I bet you in a very short moment you could say, oh, on Thursday, oh, I'm going to do this. I say, where'd you get the answer? I went inside. I go, so what's the point? The conscious mind can control your driving if it's looking out the window. But if the conscious mind is thinking, it's not looking out the window. And in a real state, let's say you are driving a car. And you're going to a destination. And in the process, you start thinking. And you, oh, well, I'm going to do this when I get there and that and blah, 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 blah. And I guess, and then all of a sudden you realize you haven't looked out the windshield for the last few minutes. You're driving and going 70 miles an hour and you didn't look out the window? I go, yeah, but, well, obviously everything looks cool. I'm okay. I go, yes, because, and this is the crux of the issue, Emma, that we talk about, and the crux of the issue is this. When the conscious mind is busy, the subconscious mind acts as autopilot. It takes over. The habit of driving is a program in the subconscious. Mm-hmm. Once you know how to drive, you don't have to think about it. It's just like you how to walk. When did you learn how to walk? Before you were two. You ever have to think about it? Never. You could be 102 and still be walking. I say from the original program downloaded in the subconscious before you were two. It's 100 years in there. Okay. So I go, so why is this significant? And the answer is we all have been programmed before we were able to be conscious. But the programs didn't come from us. They came from other people that we copied and downloaded. And then once we got to be seven, we could start to run our show. Yeah. But now the science tells us why we have the problem. And the answer is because we think 95% of the day. I go, so yeah, what does that mean? I go, when you're thinking, you're not looking out the window.
I love
that. And 95% of the day, you're not operating from your wishes and your desires. You're operating from the program you downloaded. In my particular case, give you a simple example. My father and mother had a dysfunctional relationship. I'm the boy. I watch my father's behavior. And I say, okay, I'm downloading how to be the boy, how to be the man. And now I'm older and I'm looking for a relationship, but I can't find it. You know why? Because 95% of the day I'm playing my father's program I downloaded. Well, that was dysfunctional. Yeah. I could not get a relationship off the ground. And I could never figure out why. And the answer is, because when we play the programs, we're the ones that can't see the program. Because why are we playing the program? Because we're not paying attention. So whatever the program is, we're the only ones that don't see the program. But everybody else sees the program. So I'm playing my father's dysfunctional program. I can't see I'm playing it, but any potential partner is looking at this and experiencing me going, that program sucks. I don't want to be with you. And yeah. I can't find a relationship. And guess what? I don't see I'm even involved. Why? I didn't even see I was playing the program. But I can blame people out there for why it's not working.
Yeah.
But I never realized I'm the one that generated the program. They're the ones responding to my program.
Yeah.
And the issue, Emma, in a sense that your programming put you in a fear basis that things are going to go wrong. And I say, so what are you doing 95% of the day? You're operating from where is it going wrong? Where is it going wrong? It's going to go wrong. Where is it? And I say, well, are you focusing on having a good time? No. I'm saving my life because it's going to go wrong. I go, well, there you go. And that's a story until you became smart.
Mm. Or then wait.
You can't change what you were looking for.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I love it. You know, I love this. Clearly, people would have told you this over and over, but your talent for taking the complex and making it simple. I mean, I just love it. It's so – and I think that's the thing that why I was so drawn to your work, because I was like, right, well, this guy's actually telling me what to do so I can do the thing. And I do want to go to the awesome Gaia event that you did, the Great Convergence. It was a number of years ago now. As I said, I was sitting there and I was mind blown. I think that it was the first time that I'd heard the agreement. I believe it was between Isaac Newton and the church that science would just study matter and, you know, what we can touch and feel. And the church had the domain over everything else. I was like, that makes so much sense. You know, like now I get why we don't, you know, we haven't been like looking into the unseen. But one of the things, there was a passing comment that you made and it lit me up and I'm like, oh my God, one day I'm going to ask him about that. And that was you touched on astrology. Now, astrology is a part of human design. Human design, mathematically maps astrology, the Hindu chakra system, the Kabbalah tree of life, and the Chinese I Ching, the hexagrams. It mathematically maps them all together to give us an energetic blueprint. And that blueprint basically, if I'm speaking to it through your work, what it does is actually gives us conscious awareness of the energy roadmap that lives within us. And you actually talked about astrology and you touched on neutrinos. And we talk about neutrinos all the time because that is the moment that we get imprinted. And you even just spoke again about how the conscious mind or the conscious awareness happens, I think, if I get that correctly, at 3 months before we're born. And in human design, we actually take a reading of neutrinos 3 months, 88 degrees of the sun, 3 months before we're born. And that's one part of our reading and then the time of birth. So the other thing that you said about astrology, and then I'm going to let you just riff on all of this. The other thing you said, which I thought was like, I knew it, was you said, like, haven't you ever noticed that astrology is really, really accurate? Or not really, really accurate, but you're like, yeah, that really resonates with me. And then you start to raise your consciousness and all of a sudden you kind of get further and further away from it. And I was like, oh my God, I've had that experience with my human design. So I would love you to riff on astrology, neutrinos, and as we raise our consciousness, how that kind of impacts these modalities that we work with.
This is your monthly reminder to go to the show notes and check out the Body Graph Chart software. I know you've heard us talk about this before, so I'll keep this very short and very sweet. But if you want to know the tool that we've used to bring in over 20,000 new leads and five figures in passive revenue into our business, then go check it out. It's amazing. Stop sending people away to other people's websites to get their human design chart. Instead, use this tool to put it on your own website. You won't regret it. And use the code Human Design Podcast, all lowercase, all together, Human Design Podcast, to get 50% off for a year.
Okay, you first brought up the idea of Newton and the church. And I go, relevance. The church was running society. And the church had rules that if you didn't follow the rules, you were a heretic. And if you were a heretic, then you can get punished. You can get burned at the stake. They could punish you in so many different ways. So the idea was a heretic was anybody who challenged the belief of the church. Well, science started to come up and say some of the things like Genesis may have not been fully really real. And science starts talking about like evolution, and the church is like, oh my God, that's a heresy. And therefore, science was repressed because nobody wanted to say anything because then they were open for punishment. Newton came in and said, wait, his physics, Newtonian physics, separated the universe into matter and energy, two different realms, the invisible realm, energy, the physical realm, matter. And the rule, and this is the interesting part that still screws us up, is that the two don't interact. Matter affects matter, energy affects energy, but they don't interact. So with that conclusion, which was based on a study of the solar system, he came to a conclusion and says, wait, the body is separate from the energy, that spirituality is the realm of energy and the invisible. So he said, guess what? As scientists, we will not talk about spirituality. We will not bring that invisible stuff into the field. We'll just talk about the physical body. So it's not stepping on the church's feet. It's like, okay, you do your stuff. We do our stuff. That allowed science to open up the door and study the body, but it had to do so by separating mind and spirituality out of the body and saying realm of the metaphysics. So physics was study the real, metaphysics was study the invisible stuff. Okay. So there was a separation, and that allowed science to make these jumps into the world, okay? So that was an important part. But that separation also came with a problem, and that was matter and energy don't talk to each other. So ignore your mind, ignore spirit, ignore consciousness. Why? It's not relevant. You're a physical machine. Your chemical imbalance, as we talked about a little while ago, is the character of your life. You have no control. Genes do this by themselves without you being involved. And that's where we led to with Newtonian physics. 1927, the new physics came in. And I said, what's the emphasis of the new physics? The answer is this. If you take the atom, which represents the physical world, apart, then we have that little solar system with the nucleus, protons and neutrons and electrons running around. And that's just a miniature physical world. But in 1927, they finally came to the conclusion, what is an electron made out of? What's a proton made out of, or a neutron? And when they looked inside, there was nothing physical. It was all energy. And all of a sudden they said, well, wait, matter is actually a form of energy. It's an illusion. It's matter, but it's all the atoms are made out of energy. Anything made out of atoms is energy. And all of a sudden it says, yeah, but energy interacts with energy. And all of a sudden it says, then the world changes because what we left out in the realm of metaphysics now is physics, but it's called quantum physics. And quantum physics recognizes that consciousness, and this is principle number one, the most valid science on the planet, quantum physics, most valid science, principle one, consciousness is creating your life experience. Change your consciousness, change your life experiences. Okay. Well, the significance about that consciousness is, what is it? It's an energy field. And I say, what's a field? That's the word in physics. So let's look at the definition of the word field. You ready? Invisible moving forces that influence the physical world. Okay. Now I go, oh, spirit, definition. Invisible moving forces that influence the physical world. And I said, oh my God, quantum physics, it says spirit is an energy field that is influencing what we are. And I go, so what? So we're in an energy field. Wherever you're sitting right now, mobile phone broadcasts are going through your room, television broadcast, radio broadcast, solar energy is coming in. I say, solar energy, yeah. The energy that is in the universe is the aquarium in which we sit. And we're affected by this energy. We're affected whether the sun is out or the sun is not out. That changes everything. We're affected by things over time. Animals and plants, lower forms of life are locked into the field. The sparrows go back to Capistrano on a certain day in the spring. The turtles come out of the eggs and hatch on a certain day. And I go, oh, then organisms are locked into the energy of the field. And then I go, and guess what? The field that we're in is influenced by the sun. It's the source of the energy. And I go, what about the planets? They're like magnets. I go, so what is that? And I go, in physics, if you have an energy source and a magnet, the magnet can move the energy source. The magnet can make the energy come together, or it can make the energy expand, but depending on the magnet. I go, oh, so wait a minute. The sun is radiating the energy. The planets are the magnets. And they have different influence on the energy, expanding, contracting, and doing that. And I go, yeah, but we read the energy field. And so when the energy field changes because of a planetary change, then we are altered in our biology. A recent study, which I, not recent, it's a long time ago now, which I love because it was a science study, but if you understood the bottom meaning of it, it's like, oh my God, it's the foundation of astrology. I go, what is it? Snails eat from the bottom. And so to prevent them from going over the same place they were just eating, they always eat in a spiral. Like they always go in a circle and they never go over the same track again. So they're always getting fresh. Okay. So what's the point? Well, the spiral has a turn to it. And what they did is they put snails in a track with a Y at the end. They could go right or they could go left. And what they found is, the snail will go down the track, and in this particular case, it would always take the right. It was always looking for the spiral, okay? So it would go down the track, comes to the split, and it would stay to the right because that would be the direction of making a spiral. Well, they did the experiment every day, and guess what? Every day, the snail goes to the right. But there were some days where the snail went 50-50. It was like, what do you mean? Well, it would go to the left as much as it went to the right. I said, what days were those? The day of the new moon. And they go, what? How?
Stop
Why?
It. That's so good.
So then I said, but what did they find out? They said they made an artificial magnetic field, like the Earth's magnetic field, north and south. And they found that on the new moon, when they would start to split and go either way, if they turned the magnetic field, the artificial one, 180 degrees, then the snail always went to the right. And I said, so what was the point? The moon's energy alters the magnetic field, which in turn determines should the snail go right or should the snail go left. The behavior of the snail is linked to the moon via the geomagnetic field. I go, so what was the point? Well, it made an interesting study, but it's also the foundation of astrology. Why? Yeah. The phase of the moon determined the behavior. And all of a sudden, it goes, yes! And then I go, so astrologers over the years have linked the movements of those magnets, the planets, and changing the focus of the energy to eliciting different behaviors. I go, yeah! And I go, so what's the point? If the planets are making a certain alignment, then the energy is aligned to make you do this or make you do that behavior, just like the snail going left or right. I go, so what? And I go, this is true. we are controlled by these fields, except, I said, what's except? As you become more conscious, you don't have to be a victim of the field because consciousness creates its own field. So if a negative energy from astrology is coming in, consciousness can change the field and negate it. And that's why real astrologers, which I call, these are the like the professors of astrology, okay, and it's called esoteric astrology. Before they do a reading on a person, they do an assessment of consciousness. I go, why? The more conscious the person is, the less you can predict. Why? The more conscious they are, they can change the field. And that was the point. People who are not conscious, you can tell them exactly what they're going to do on March 5th, okay? People who are conscious, you can say, this is the energy, but you probably won't respond to it because if it's an energy you like, you might do it, and if it's an energy you don't like, cancel it. You have that power.
Oh, my God, Bruce. You've just blown my mind, and I love this so much because – so one of the things in – obviously in astrology, but in the human design world, we talk about, of course, the transits. And one of the things that I have that I'm always banging on about is, you know, like I like to look at the transits in reverse. So we can have a look at it and sort of say, okay, well, that's what that energy feels like in my body, or that's maybe how I respond to it. But I've never resonated with someone telling me, you will, this is, this bad thing is going to happen. And I, or even like this good thing is going to happen. I'm like, hang on a second. I get to choose that. Like, and I've always felt like, yes, I believe in the energetic influence, but it's the story I tell myself. It's the belief that I choose about those things is how that energy is going to work with me. So you've just given my brain the evidence it needs. Like, yes, I was definitely onto something there. So, yeah, let's talk about this astrology piece and really understanding that, because I think, in my opinion, like a lot of people get stuck in their astrology, and in my world, it's human design. It's like they identify with it, and it's like they're moving out of one dogma and into another. And one of the things I'm like, no, you just want to express these energies, but they're not necessarily who you are. So what is the, like, the impact? You were talking about the magnets of the planets and how they affected the snails, which I just loved. That was so cool.
Yeah.
So there's evidence that they are moving us and having this impact, but how does consciousness play into all of that?
Well, basically, with the alteration of the energy in the field coming from the movement of the planets, it changes the character of the behavior because the energy of the field changes. You know, there's energy that's peaceful. There's energy that's upsetting energy. I say, yeah, but what's the unique part? And I say, if you're not aware of this energy and you're not conscious, the energy is going to control you 95% of the day. Okay. But if you become conscious, you change your thinking. I say, what does that mean? I go, well, first of all, a lot of people think your thoughts are contained in your head. So we put wires on a person's head. We call electroencephalograph. Yeah, I could read what's going on inside your head. I go, there's another device that reads brain function, but it's not called electroencephalograph. It's called magnetoencephalograph. I go, yeah, what does it do? It reads brain function. I go, yeah, but what's unique? The probe is out here. Now, for a moment, you have to stop for 1 second and say, wait, I'm reading your brain function out here. Point, your thoughts are not contained in your head. Your thoughts are generating an energy field. Mm-hmm. Well, energy can come together in two extreme ways. Two energies that are in harmony, when they come together because they're in the same wave, add up the power, make more power. This is what good vibes are all about. You meet somebody whose energy is in harmony with you, and your energy and their energy, when they come together, you feel extra energy. You feel good vibes, okay? But two energies that are not in harmony when they come together can cancel each other out. That's called bad vibes, okay?
Yeah.
And I go, what's the significance of that? And I go, well, first of all, energy is life.
Yeah.
And so if you're going to cancel your energy, you start to recognize your life is in threat. That's what bad vibes are all about. They're giving you a warning that something in your environment is altering the energy that doesn't support you anymore. And you become aware of bad vibes. And now you become conscious of looking out. Okay, something's going on. good vibes, just the opposite. It's like, oh, wow, meeting you was great fun. Everything was great. I love that. Okay. So I say, yeah, but what does it mean? It means that waves interact with each other. Now we just started with the fact your brain is sending out vibrational waves. Okay. The universe is bringing in vibrational waves. Point. If you're in agreement with the universe, then the waves are going to, you know, affect you in one way. But if you don't like the energy that's coming in, you can broadcast an energy. It's the opposite. It's the bad vibe. It's called destructive interference. Destructive. It will cancel the energy coming in. So you can send out energy that will enhance the energy coming in, or you can send out energy that will cancel the energy coming in, but you have to be conscious to do this.
Wow.
So if a person becomes more conscious, their ability to read the energy gives them the opportunity to respond to the energy.
Yep.
If it's an energy that's positive, they can go, yeah, let's take that baby in. But if it's an energy that's negative, they can say, well, let's cancel it. And all of a sudden, that energy doesn't affect you. But if you're not operating from consciousness, the subconscious doesn't pay attention to that. The subconscious is just going to play whatever programs there are. And therefore, people that are unaware, unconscious, the waves control them. They have no influence over the waves.
Mm.
When you become more conscious, you can cancel or enhance the waves to your benefit. And all of a sudden,
it says,
you're outside of predictability. I can't predict you anymore. Okay.
I love that.
And that's really important because it says your thoughts are influencing the energy outside of you. And energy interacts with energy, quantum physics.
Mm-hmm.
And that the energy of your thoughts are there. Let me give an Albert Einstein quote.
Please.
And you get the meaning of this is profound. It says, the field, and let's just emphasize definition, the field is the energy in which we're immersed right now.
Mm-hmm.
The field is the sole governing agency of matter. It's
wow.
The field that shapes matter, not the matter shaping the field. It's the other way around.
Yeah.
Our biology is matter, but it's influenced by the field. Okay?
Yeah.
So basically then it says, for the person who is unaware, the field will shape their behavior to conform to good vibes, bad vibes, whatever the hell it is, and they're just like unwilling participants that are in the game without even knowing they're playing the game. Okay?
Yeah.
But the whole idea of becoming conscious and aware says, I'm not controlled by that field. I can make my own field.
Yeah.
Well, it's the field that controls matter. It's how consciousness creates your life physical experiences.
Yeah.
And this is why quantum physics, the most valid of all sciences, recognizes consciousness is creating your life experiences. They go, yeah, why? It's broadcasting a field which shapes the material world. If you're broadcasting a negative field,
yeah,
what do you think you're going to get? You know, it's not going to
be
roses and puppy dogs. You're in a lot of trouble at that moment, you know? And the idea is you don't know that your thoughts are even affecting the field. Well, since only 5% of our life is coming from our own thoughts, then it's your program that is creating your life experience because that's what's being broadcast.
Yeah.
And when you become conscious and stop playing the program, then you generate the field. Well, yeah, there's a whole different picture I would generate if I was generating a field than if my former subconscious programs were generating a field. We have two different images of life. My wishes and desires wouldn't play as long as the 95% is coming from the program.
Yeah.
My life is now shaped by my history.
So, I'm curious about something because I love what you were saying about. So one of the things for me that I talk about is that it's almost like people overinvest in protecting their energy. And when you were speaking, I kind of got this image that, you know, when we choose like, okay, that's a bad vibe. That's not something that I want to take in. It's almost like just letting it, you know, like roll off your left shoulder or something. It's like, don't engage with it. Whereas I feel like there's a lot of people out there now because we're in this chaotic time of change. We're waking up. We're realizing that we've been conditioned, that the conditioning force has been, you know, driving us down a road that actually isn't in our best you know, in our best interest. So the thing that I think is really important just to hone in on a little bit is it's not about fighting the force. It's about going, well, that's not that, like, that's a bad vibe. I don't want that. I'm just going to let that roll off my shoulder. And I'm going to continue to focus on, okay, the good vibes, as you put it, or who I'm, you know, who I want to become, or the impact that I want to have, or what I believe is potential. Is that fair to say? Because I think people get really stuck in the, like, trying to fight against, and I think that's not serving.
Not fighting, it's not listening. You don't have to listen. It could exist. It could be in the background. If you choose to focus on it, you can bring it to the foreground. Or you can just let it play in the background and not participate in what's going on back there. These are choices. Mm-hmm. You know, this is very important because I have a personal life experience that's really related to this. And I go, what is it? I go, well, years ago, I might have been called manic depressive at some point. I go, what does that mean? I go, well, when things were working, everything was great. Yeah, I really love that. But when things not working, it was a spiral that went downhill and was depressing and go down the bottom and go, ah. And I was in my lab at the university and doing an experiment that took like 2 hours to set up. And then if you didn't do something right, you had to start over again. So the third time during the day, I just spent 6 hours working on this. It's failing. The third time it failed, I just like have somebody on my shoulder, my subconscious program's not good enough guy. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's not, you're not that smart. You're not that good. You know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm listening to this and it's just like, what a depressing, you know, it's just like the afternoon was wasted. I'm now berating myself for not being good enough and all that. I'm in the lab alone. And all of a sudden I hear a voice like somebody's right there in front of me. And the voice says, don't you have anything better to do than to listen to that crap? And I stopped for a moment, first in awe of where the hell did that come from? But then it was like, yeah, I got something, but I'd rather go see a movie. And it was a newspaper right there. So I picked up the newspaper, said, I'm going to the movie. I got in the car, went to the movie, came out of the movie, refreshed, everything was great. No depression. Why?
Yeah.
I stopped. It was a choice, but it was only because of the humor of the situation that got my attention. Don't I have anything better to do? Of course, anything better to do than berate myself. The next time I started to go down, I started to go down a little bit, and all of a sudden the memory came back. And I started to laugh a little bit, and I go, yep, stop. Just go and do something else right now. Just get out of this picture right now. Mm-hmm. Then it happened about a third time, but it was even caught earlier. And then after that, and this is a true story, whatever number, 30, 40 years, I have not been depressed. Mm. My programming was when that stuff started, my mind was redirected from that, just listening. Don't I have anything better to do? And so, of course, I can do anything besides listen to this story. Yeah. Go do something you like. You know, give something that's more fun, more interesting, more exciting. Because the moment you start doing that, you will not be back into the dialogue with yourself about it not working.
Yeah.
And you let go. And the fact is, well, it's been, you know, 40 years maybe, I have not been in that depressed state.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean everything goes right. I never said that.
No, we're
but
human.
The point is, when it doesn't go right, I don't engage.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not getting involved at talk to who did what, and I don't care anymore. And
and
it's funny, there used to be a show on American TV called Bob Newhart. He was a comedian, and he had a show, he was a psychologist. And I loved it because no matter who came in and whatever their issue was, and they'd sit on the other side of the desk and they go, I got about this, blah, 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 blah. And then his thing always was, just stop it. He would, no matter what the complaint was, just stop it. And the fact is, that was actually what happened.
I have shared that clip with I don't know how many thousands of people. I love it. And I actually remember sitting in my training when I was becoming a master coach, and we were deep in, you know, philosophizing and thinking and da-da-da-da. And my mentor just put that up on the screen. And, you know, at the end of the day, just stop it. You know, like, don't get too stuck in what's going wrong. It's the pattern interrupt. It's the stop it.
And it's like, it works. That's the fun part of it. It's like, you know, we always look, humans have been programmed to see things as complex.
Yeah.
And if something is too easy, we will just deny it ourselves. It's like, well, it can't be if that's too easy. And it turns out that's the failure of the system. Nature is simple. Humans are complex.
100%. And
we go to the simplicity of it. And it's like, stop it. Really? You can stop it? Yeah, just the moment you hear it, you have awareness. The moment you hear yourself in it, you have a moment of awareness and it says, I hear it. What do you want to do? We can continue all day with this if you want.
Yeah.
Or go do that other thing. And that's a real powerful tool that people don't recognize because, A, it's so simple.
Yeah.
You know, and so...
And yeah, I think people don't get it, you know, like they just, I think, as you said, we are programmed to think that, I know for me, when I got my diagnosis, it was something, you know, they told me it was something that I had no control over. And I remember when I first started down the NLP road, and the way NLP talks about things like depression is it's something you're doing. And the moment I was like, oh, I'm doing this thing, it's not who I am, everything shifted for me. Cause I'm like, well, if I can do this, then I can do something different. And I think that that is what we really need to understand, is that we have so much more sovereignty and power within us than we've ever been taught in school, at home, in society, by the media. Like we just, you know, there's something we could stop doing, consuming that.
We do it because that's the program. We always do it this way.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, well, we always do it this way. And it's not a justification for anything. It's just that you've been doing it wrong always. So,
exactly.
But the issue about it is what you just did and what I just said are the same story. The same story, because the depression is an ongoing process, and it can stop, but it doesn't stop by itself. It has to stop with the person who is having the experience. They're the ones that can say, I can continue talking to myself and getting upset, or I can just stop it and go do something else. Yeah. And a lot of people out there are hearing us and they're going, oh, come on, that's too simple. And I go, that's why it works.
Yeah, and it does work. And I think it's that also that piece of like, you know, I don't have the shiny story that my depression was fixed in a week. It took me 7 years. But, you know, I reconditioned my brain to the point that I know I'm never going back there. I know I'm never going back there. So, you know, we can all do it. We just have to start with the belief that we can, and then be perseverant and just keep turning up for ourselves.
Well, you're right. The first thing, which is always the hardest for people, is to actually do something.
Yeah.
You can think about it all your life. Yeah, I got to do something about it. I'm gonna do something about this. It's like, no, you've got to actually do something. That is the breakthrough. It's interesting. A friend of mine was Cleve Baxter. He wrote a book about the secret life of plants. And he was a guy that worked with a lie detector, energy on the skin. And he thought, let me put this on this plant to see if I can get a reading. Does the plant respond? And he was so depressed because he kept trying to get it to respond and nothing was responding and nothing. Then he was thinking, damn it, if you don't respond, I'm going to throw you in the trash can. I'm going to put you in a dumpster. Nothing, nothing, nothing. And then kept saying, I'm getting mad. I'm going to throw you away. I'm going to do nothing. The moment he made the commitment to do it, he's like, got off his chair. Now I'm throwing you in the dumpster. The plant went nuts. And the point about it is very important. The intentions are not a broadcast manifestation. They're just ideas in here, okay? But the moment you engage something, then the energy is out in the field. Yeah. And so the important part was, no matter how much he was thinking, I'm going to throw you in a dumpster, the plant didn't care. Why? It did not affect the field. But the moment he made action, then the plant immediately responded. And it always brings it because Mozzie's, I see it on the wall, I want to kill it. So I got my little fly swatter and I'm standing there. I'm going to swing it. The moment I swing, he flies away. He sat there the entire time until the moment I started to swing, then gone. And I said, that's the same as the plant.
Yeah.
The organisms know when the action is versus when the idea of the action.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we should recognize that because, as we were talking about, we actually, to make the change, we actually have to make the action.
Yeah.
Thinking about the change is not going to, has no influence whatsoever.
Yeah. And I think this is really powerful. And I definitely would love to hear about, I know we were talking before about neutrinos. We talk about neutrinos in our work. And I'm conscious of your time. So I'd love to also ask you, and I'll step back and tell a little bit of a story first, and then it'll get to a question. From a human design perspective, like many modalities, many teachings, we talk about this time. We call it the new paradigm in 2027. Obviously, astrology talks about the age of Aquarius. There's a bunch of different modalities, but they all talk about this time between now and 2027. And as we move into this new paradigm, we're going to have this big shift of energy. And we're going into this time that's going to be more individualistic, and counterintuitively, that will be more loving, because once we love ourselves, then of course we will have more capacity to love the other. As we go through this time, so many people are catastrophizing. I mean, probably not the listeners to this podcast, but the majority of the world are catastrophizing. Oh my God, we're all, excuse my language, fucked. And in my opinion, we're not. We're just in this huge time of transformation. So my question to you is, what are three things that people really need to understand about this transformation that we're in? And I know you kind of talk about it as the great convergence or the next great extinction. And then what are three things that people can do to actually navigate this time and get through to what we call the new paradigm?
Okay, well, of course, the whole thing is action happening because we're not sustainable and we are killing ourselves.
Yep.
So we don't have to ask nature what nature can do. We have to ask us what we can do. Yep. And then all of a sudden there's a time that says, well, then I've got to change the way I'm engaging in this world. And there's action and no action. Yeah, I'm going to do better. And then you just go on because you're playing a program. You're going to do the same damn thing over and over again. It's when you make that step, just like we just talked about with the plant. Until you make the step, there is no action going to come from any of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay? That when we make this step, we have to recognize, and I go back to this, it's very critical, life is based on energy. If we have energy, we have life. If we have no energy, obviously we have no life. And all of a sudden I say, yeah, but here's some things about energy you have to recognize. Every action and behavior in the human body, from metabolic to driving the car, takes energy. Everything you do takes energy. Well, people have not recognized that energy is a commodity. You have so much energy. You go, so what? I give the analogy. Money is a form of energy. It allows you to do what you would like to do. It's a unit of energy. You have a bank account. You have a checkbook. You don't go down the street and write checks for no reason at all. You're smarter than that. Why should I throw away my money? I throw away my money. I'm compromising my life. And I go, but we throw away our energy.
Yes.
We do things that are no value to us. I'll give an example. Your behavior can do something to enhance your life. And that's when you're using your energy to make your life better, your partner's life better, your community's life better. Anything that you're going to engage in, if that is the net result of your engagement, that's a worthwhile thing to do. But if your energy is put into something and it returns nothing to you, that's the same as writing a bad check. Meaning what? I gave it away. I give an example, because especially people in the politics, they'll drink in a bar and then they'll get angry and they'll yell at each other and they get hot and they get heavy and they're angry and they're doing all this stuff. A very important little note of physics, heat, by definition, is called wasted energy. So if you get all fired up and you're heated up and you're angry and you're using a tremendous amount of energy, did you accomplish anything? No. Why? Well, you just had this big argument. Is the government going to change? No. Then you use this very large amount of energy to generate all that heat and everything, and you got nothing from that? I say, no. Then why did you do it?
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden it says, wait, if I'm going to do something, is there a return? I put my energy in, that's an investment. Do I get something back?
Yeah.
And then I said, but if you don't get anything back, then you have just thrown out energy, like write a check and just give it away to somebody for no reason at all, because you are giving away your life. And that people really have to recognize, if this, I'm doing something, is it because that's the way we always do it and everybody just do it and they just do it and no thinking because that's just the way it is?
Yeah.
Or are you doing it because there's some benefit that comes from what you do? That's a very important decision.
Valuing your energy. It's massive. It's massive. It's like, it's basically saying, do I value my own energy or not? You know?
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah,
Energy is your life.
Yeah.
Do you want, are you investing your energy or are you wasting your energy? That's bottom line right there. And it basically said, well, then all of a sudden you have to start looking at your behaviors and go, how can I increase my energy, you know, how my bank account?
Yeah.
Because with energy, I can do things in my life. Without energy, I'm a victim beyond, I have no control of anything at that point.
Yeah.
So that becomes a very critical insight to understanding that, okay? Another aspect is this. Don't put your energy into something you cannot control.
Mm.
Because that means you put in this energy and I say, did it change? I say, no, you had no control over that.
Yeah. Oh,
people want to put their energy to fix the world. I say, why do you want to do that? Because it's not going to work. It doesn't work now, and you can't fix it. And it's a bigger energy than you. So if you take your energy, try to change the bigger energy, that's like two wires come together, opposite polarity, fire. Melt the wires. Gone. Energy wasted. Wires are gone. I go, going into a system to change that's bigger than you is a loss of your energy that you have no value over, but to irritate yourself when you do all that work and nothing changes at some point, it's like that's an irritation.
Yeah.
The answer to how you resolve it is you don't go and change it. You go outside and you create something different.
I love that.
And that's where the new civilization is going to come from. Why? This one cannot be fixed. Mm-hmm. This is the problem.
Yeah, it's meant
to break. We're expending more than the earth can even give us.
Yeah.
Okay. So it says, well, then you can't fix it. I go, yeah, you know why it's important? Because most people are sitting in front of their TV, watching the news or surfing the web and reading about, oh my God, it's falling apart. It's falling apart. It's falling apart, which then attacks them because their life seems to be interwoven to that structure. And if their structure falls apart, their life falls apart. They take this home. It gets very personal. It's like, oh my God, it's all falling apart. And now I'm feeling really weak and I'm feeling desperate and I'm feeling afraid. And I go, well, if you know it's going to fall apart, if you know that it's required to fall apart, if you know there's an option because there are people stepping outside the system that are creating a different world outside, the seeds for a new civilization. Emma, this is why your work is so important.
Thank you.
We have to train for a new civilization. It's like job retraining. Old job, desperate, loss, fear. Yeah. New job, I can become creative. It's really interesting how many people were so afraid of losing their jobs, but when they lost their jobs and then started to do something that they liked, their life was better. You know, it's like, geez, I enjoy doing this. It's like, oh, well, now it's not work anymore, is it? No, work was because you're doing it in resistance. But creativity is you're doing it because you enjoy doing it. Oh, well, guess what? It's not called work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the future world is not based on work as we know it. It's based on cooperation.
Yeah.
Darwin's theory is 100% wrong in regard to the fact that life is a struggle and there's competition to who's the winner and who's the loser.
Yeah.
Because a garden is not a battleground. A garden is the height of community. We came from a garden, turned it into a battleground, are now seeing the collapse of the garden. And the only way is get out of that behavior and start honoring the garden, start living in harmony. And guess what? Health will return.
Yeah.
Health is being in harmony with the planet. And we're not living in harmony.
Yeah.
And I say, well, that costs.
Yep.
And humans are going to die out. not because we have to, it's because they won't adapt to the necessity of learning to live in harmony, learning to live in community.
Yeah.
And the Darwin theory is wrong, and yet the leadership of our world sees that as the science.
Yeah.
That's just the way life is.
I think the first time I heard you talk about it was that great convergence. And I took great pleasure in sitting down both of my children and saying, Darwin was wrong, and going through this whole thing with them. I also have children that the day an alien turns up in front of them, they'll be like, hey, g'day, mate. Nice to meet you. Like they won't be freaking out. Like the things that I talk to my kids about, it's crazy. So,
but the kids are receptive. A child, when they're born, is not a violent. There's no violence in the human genetic behavior. It's not violent, okay? We manifest violence, okay? There's a wonderful study. I have a video, and they use these blocks. They're like a square block, a circular block, and a triangle block, and there's a little hill. And the circle is trying to go up the hill, and it keeps trying. It goes roll down. It keeps trying. It rolls down. And then the triangle block comes behind and pushes it up so it gets over the top. Then the next scene is the same thing, trying to go up the hill, and a square block pushes it down the hill. And they let the infant watch this. This is nonverbal infant, okay, watching this. And then after this puppet show, which has curtains and opens and closes, they come out with a tray. And on the tray is a triangle and a square. The kids do not pick up the square. They pick up the triangle. The reason why? They saw that the triangle was helping. The square was not helping. Yeah. And immediately in their mind, they went for the helper. They didn't go for the other one. At this infant stage, pre-verbal, they could see this.
Yeah.
And violence is something we acquire. I say, how do you acquire this? And here's an interesting story, and mothers and fathers, they got to understand this, especially of young babies just born. The term is called somatosensory affection, okay? Mm-hmm. What does it mean? Well, you know, in a house we have a thermostat where when it gets up, you know, when it goes below the temperature, the heat turns on. When it gets up to the temperature, the heat turns off, on and off control. In the brain, there is a stress thermostat that measures the amount of stress hormones. I go, what's relevant? Well, consider like a thermometer. And that if the mercury keeps rising and rising and rising, when it gets to the top, what's it going to do? Blow out. That's violence, okay? And I say, so what's the point? I say, well, there's a level of stress that increases. And if you can't shut the stress off, boom, you go violent. Mm. They wanted to find out what was it that set that thermostat. It turns out how much the child is held in love, physical holding, somato, body, sensory. The body of an infant can feel safety and security. It's not painful holding or hurting. Mm. It's comfort holding.
Yeah.
The more the child gets comfort holding, the lower the thermostat goes, meaning the stress hormones shut off fast. The less security the child has, the higher the threshold of stress hormones before it shuts off. Wow. An insecure child in its environment is not feeling safe or supported in any sense of the way, will have the thermostat up so high that by the time it reaches that cutoff, it's already exploded. That's violence. Mm-hmm. So it turns out violence is learned. It's acquired.
Yeah.
And it's acquired because children feel disconnected, insecure, abused, unsafe. And as a result, the stress hormones are preparing them to deal with the safety issue they're experiencing.
Yeah.
Okay. If they feel very secure and safe, the stress hormones never go high. They just come and they go down. They come, they go down.
Yeah.
And these individuals are unaffected by stress.
Yeah. Yeah.
That there, but stress is what's causing disease. So the less stress. So it says all of a sudden, well, stress is not an accident. Stress is learned. Stress is programmed, and is programmed by the insecurities that an individual have. Meaning, I need to engage my protection system, the adrenal system. I don't feel safe, and the less safe they feel, the more those stress hormones get to a point that one of the responses of the adrenal system is fight or flight.
Yeah.
And that's where violence comes from, the fight part of the adrenal system. And it's interesting because when they did the research, they found, well, how do you know, can we check this in human civilization? Well, there are civilizations that have come and gone, some still present, where they have a compendium of the behavior of these civilizations. And what they looked at, they said, is violence present in a civilization that holds their children? And it turns out 75% of the cultures that hold their children are nonviolent.
Wow.
Well, then they were stuck because they said, well, what about the 25% that hold the children? But they do become violent. There's a second level of bonding. The first level of bonding, the safety, the holding, is the bonding of a family community.
Yeah.
The second level of bonding is finding a mate.
Wow.
And what they found out was this. They looked at the cultures that held their children and those cultures which also had no taboos on sex.
Yeah.
100% of those cultures are nonviolent.
Wow.
And a friend of mine who was head of the Institute of Child Health and Human Development at the NIH, our big science thing, James Prescott, he reported this and the government fired him because he reported that the government and the church are knowingly creating a violent population.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, can't tell people that. So they fired him, but it was the truth.
Yeah.
So it really is incumbent to understand our future children, if they are given that love and support and security, will all grow up to be nonviolent individuals.
Yeah.
And we need to change the world because violence is being perpetrated and propagated continuously here.
And normalized.
Without any reason thinking, chimpanzees are violent, so humans are like chimpanzees, so we are violent too. And I go, no. It's learned. It's learned.
Yeah. Wow. I am so grateful. I'm so grateful for having you here. I wish I could talk to you forever. I've got 50,000 other questions because your brain is one that I've wanted to access for 20 years.
Emma, let's do it again, babe. Let's do it.
We'll book
like
you in
it.
For another one. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing in the world. Like, you literally did save my life. Like, I thought about taking my own life for many years, and your book still to this day is in my top five. I'm always like, you have to get the biology of belief.
I need to stop you there for 1 second. You saved your life.
Thank you.
I offered some information. I can offer, and some people don't care. That don't make any difference. Or if they care, they do something. But they did it. And I really want to emphasize, you are the powerful source of who you are.
Thank you.
And
thank
I want to thank you because you use that to become an educator.
Yes.
So other people don't have to go through that.
Exactly. So I am very grateful for you. I am very grateful for this opportunity. Thank you so much for taking the time. And I know we had a bit of a hiccup, so thank you for making extra time for me today. Thanks for being here, Bruce.
I so appreciate working with you, Emma, and I look forward to a future opportunity because we just touched the tip of an iceberg with so much information behind it. I look forward to another opportunity to be here with you, but I want to be with your audience.
Yes. Well, you know what, Bruce? Here's an invitation for you to think about. One of the things that I do in my community is we invite teachers to come in and teach within my community. It's one of the things that, everyone that trained me were like, you have to be the answer to everybody's thing. They're like, that's not how I work. I'm all about community. Community is my big thing. So we bring in very epic teachers to come in and teach to our community. So
the invitation's on the table.
I like that. You know, where are you located? Which city is your closest one?
Well, I live in Byron Bay, which is probably...
Oh, Byron Bay. Been there a lot. Love that place. Yeah.
It's epic.
Oh, my God. That's...
It's a beautiful part of the world.
I had a very strange experience in
Byron
Bay.
Of course you did. Tell me.
I was with a friend of mine. His name is Patch Adams. And there was a movie about
him. Not like the real Patch Adams.
The real Patch Adams.
Oh, my God. I love that movie.
And we were hanging out in downtown. It was Saturday night. And we went out to get some dinner. And we were back on the sidewalk. And as we're walking down the sidewalk, this young guy with an older woman was walking toward us, and I saw him stare at Patch as we walked by. And then he turned around and he got in front of us. He said, you're Patch Adams. And Patch, of course, yeah, you know, whatever he said, funny something. And the guy said, I want to thank you because of you, I've gone to medical school and I'm working with young kids. And I want to thank you for that.
Wow.
Well, Patch Adams is a crazy kind of guy. And so he said, let's moon them, meaning drop your pants.
Yep.
We're on a downtown in Byron Bay on Saturday night, and everybody's around, and I'm watching him, and he turns around, and he starts to loosen his pants, and I'm thinking, oh, man, am I with him or am I watching him?
Yeah.
So I turned around, and we both mooned his aunt at the same time.
I love it.
And I thought, how crazy is that? Downtown Byron Bay, Saturday night.
Yep.
But it just shows you some people are crazy and they're fun to be with.
Yeah. And I reckon that's a world we're creating, right, Bruce? Like playfulness, craziness. And, you know, it doesn't surprise me at all because in downtown Byron Bay, anything goes. Like we're here to create a whole new dimension, let alone a whole new life.
Well, I love that area. We did some programs a while back called Uplift, where we brought in a whole bunch of speakers. That's why Patch Adams was with me, because he was one of the speakers. And we did it at the ground, someplace right outside of Byron Bay, a public grounds, where in a place to give lecture.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful because the community of Byron Bay showed up big time.
Yeah.
And it was exciting. And then we did that like 3 years in a row, and then we stopped. But then after that, I'd be in that area and I'd say, when are you going to do another Uplift?
Yeah.
Because the audience in Byron Bay was primed and ready to see a better world. So, I know that place and have great appreciation for it.
Amazing. Well, there's an open invitation anytime, Bruce. Anytime you're out this way, you can come and hang out. I'll take you out for dinner. Could even go and moon a few surfers with you if that's, you know, what you want to do. Or I'll get my kids to do it. Either way, whatever. Thank you so, so much for your time. And I look forward to chatting to you again in the future.
I do as well. Thank you so much, Emma. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Bruce. And thank you, everyone, for listening along. I trust that you got what you needed from today's episode. And I'm so grateful for having you here. And I look forward to having you on the next episode. Bye for now. Thanks everyone for being here all the way to the end of the podcast. I hope you got lots of value out of it. I certainly had a lot of fun doing it. Could I please ask that you share this podcast with friends if you found it valuable? And also, bonus points, could you leave a review for me as well on Apple? It would be greatly appreciated. If at any point you would like to be on the podcast or you've got questions that you'd like me to discuss on the podcast, by all means, get on my socials and DM me. Everything you need is there in the show notes. Have an awesome day. Bye for now.